Christopher and the gentleman from the SABC. As you know, this whole week was supposed to set aside for committee and the BRRR process. Someone somewhere got the bright idea that we should congratulate and thank our Paralympics. And so they've scheduled a plenary session today at 2 o'clock, which will last for an hour. So our process today is the following. We will listen to the NPA and engage with them, and then we'll break for lunch. And at 2 o'clock, between 2 and 3, there's this plenary which we have to attend. We don't have a choice in the matter. So I'm afraid there's that break. And then we'll reconvene at 3 o'clock here. Yes. How long our engagement will last, I can't say. Mr. Hoffman was saying that there are hotel bookings and things like that. And if we've created a problem for you, do forgive us. So, let me say welcome to Advocate Jiba, acting head of the NPA, Advocate Majokweni, Advocate de Kock, and Mr. Hoffmeyer. Advocate Jiba, you please help me by introducing the rest of your team, because there are some faces that I know and know well, but committee members may not know them, so I leave the introductions to you. Please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to the members of the Portfolio Committee and members of the media present. I am with today my colleagues. Some of them have been introduced by the Chairperson. I have Advocate Majokweni. She's the current head acting for the NPS. And I've got Mr. Hoffmeyer. He's the head of AFU, and I've got Advocate Karen van Rensburg. She is our acting CEO, and next to her, I have our operations management, Advocate Yannis Ketting, and then behind me, I've got the Executive Manager Finance, Mr. Gordon Hollamby, and next to him, I've got Advocate Rodney de Kock. Our host is Ryan Cape Town, a DPP in the Western Cape. And I have also Advocate Mzinyati, who is our DPP in the North Gauteng. And Maradis Borgheder, also our ops. I think I have introduced the Chairperson.
Thank you.
If, yes.
No, we've been looking forward to your presentation. I may as well tell you that. And once more, I really do apologize for the break that I spoke about, but it's something that's beyond my control. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have submitted the slide presentation, and we also submitted our annual report when we're supposed to. Our presentation, we've broken it into four headings. We'll be taking you through the summary, the high-level overview of our performance, and then we'll go through the slides and deeper into our strategic objective. We'll take you through also the challenges that we are encountering, as well as the interventions that we are trying to put in place to ensure that our performance improves. And then we take you through the audit findings, budgeting, and then we conclude. The first slide, you will notice that we start with our performance overview. I thought I must laugh at my first sentence, because we are really highlighting here that we had high conviction rates. We've maintained high conviction rates in all the courts. I know that the Honourable Member has got differences with regard to the manner in which we reflect on our conviction rate, but suffice to say that this is how we have been measuring them throughout the years. We acknowledge that probably there are other methods that are there, but this is just how we have been measuring them. We have been very transparent with the Auditor General on how we are, on how we base our conviction rate. We also acknowledge that though we're saying that we have maintained the high conviction rate in all the courts, we did not achieve such in the High Court, as you will see in the other coming slides. We've increased a number of cases finalized through ADRM by 2.2% from 129,846 in 2011 to 132,395 in 2011-2012, which is a great improvement, and it's one of those areas where we say where at least there is some form of making sure that we do increase the finalization of cases. All courts have maintained a positive clearance ratio, disposing of more cases than enrolled. There has been a 12.2% reduction in number of cases withdrawn. This is a mainly due to better screening of cases by the prosecutors. And in the next slide, we talk about the backlog court project. The backlog court project has finalized 15,886 cases, which has contributed to the reduction in the backlog of the cases. At the end of 2011-2012, there was a reduction by 5.7%, which took us to 34,926,000. As compared to 37,034 in 2011. We also had dockets which were referred for decision. You know, as prosecutors, we spend a lot of time on dockets for decision, and sometimes that is work that takes too much of the time of prosecutor, but which is not reflected anyway. We thought it's important that we should bring this to our attention, because before any case can be taken to any court, we have to have there has to be a decision that has been made in that particular case. So this year, on 2011-2012, we dealt with 657 dockets that were dealt by the prosecutors. There has been an increase in formal bail applications compared to the ones that were dealt with in 2010-2011. The figures are reflected in there. With regard to the TCCs, the TCCs, we achieved a target of 30 for 2011-2012. In addition to that, there are 52 sites which are providing services, although they do not necessarily meet the requirements of the full blueprint as is required. You will note that as we proceed to our strategic objectives, there was a slight decline with regard to asset forfeiture units, with regard to the number of cases finalized. That is due to focus on large corruption cases brought by the introduction of Output 5 in the JCPS delivery agreement. Despite that, the AFU has increased their frozen assets by 0.8% to 533 million. And if you look into the target there, it's 11% above its target. Also, which also we regard as a highlight, is the fact that both the AFU and the courts increased the victim compensation by 125% to 126 million. The contribution is divided into the, is indicated in the AFU 93.8 million and courts 32 million. These are really the Section 300 orders which are made before by the courts in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. And also, the bulk of the AFU there would be the Section 18 confiscation orders. And the refunds there would relate to the largely to the farms which were stolen illegally from the government. With regard to witness protection, there were no witnesses which were harmed or threatened while in the witness protection program. The next slide deals with our achievements with regard to our E&E targets and the indicators. The number of cases that was finalized, excluding the ADRM, we appreciate the fact that the target was not reached. The target which was set was the 365087. We achieved to finalize cases 316098. I will take the members through as soon as we finish the presentation on the intervention that we have put in place, so that going forward we are able to at least come closer to achieving our targets. But part of the reason really is what is we have always been saying, the fact that the NPA is just but one of those who are contributing to the court performance and court efficiency. The number of cases finalized through ADRMs, we have exceeded our targets there, and the conviction rate in the high courts, as I have mentioned, there's a minus 2.4%, which is really a slight deviation of 87%. But we're not so very much proud of that, because we do have an expectation that at least in the high courts we'll be able to maintain those conviction rates. We are also working on that. The conviction rates in the regional courts have been exceeded, similarly in the district courts. I've also stated the TCCs where we have reached our targets. I'm not going to deal with the E&E targets insofar as the AFU is concerned. My colleague, Willie Hofmeyer, will take us through the whole E&E targets of the Assets for Future Unit when he is presenting also the strategic objective number two. Yeah, strategic objective two. If we can just skip this slide, Chairperson, and go to strategic objective number one. What we're trying to show really in this slide is there will always be this belief that the seriousness of the offence will be determined by the type of a sentence that is imposed. So we have described serious crime as those crimes that take place that are heard before the regional court and the high court. So here in 2011-2012, our courts have sentenced a number of people to 10 years imprisonment without an option of a fine. And that number is 6,125. So in the next one, we're showing the number of convictions in criminal court cases that are measured against the number of new cases that are enrolled in the regional and the high court. And the figure there is 38.4%, which is 29,728. I think that 629 is actually wrong. It should be 628, not 629, because that's what we have in our annual report. This could have been a typographical error. Our apologies for that. And if you continue with our conviction rates in the complex commercial crime, this refers only to the dedicated courts for commercial crime cases. You will note that we do have a decline, but at least if you look into the decline itself, I mean, the target is 92%, but if you look into there, it's 91.6%. So the target really is slight, but we do not necessarily say we want to have a decline in our targets. Similar to the conviction rates on trio crimes, but what is of importance in the trio crimes at least is the number of the convictions themselves, which has increased to 1,425 as compared to 347 which was set as a target. And the conviction rate of the organized crime as well, due I suppose to a better focus on the investigations from inception up until the case is being taken to court, ideally, which is what we should be doing also with regard to the complex commercial crimes, because those cases that are committed in an organized fashion need that guidance from the inception of the investigation itself before it goes to court. And we proceed to the conviction rate in sexual offenses. And these I just want to bring it to your attention that these include all sexual offenses, not necessarily the traditionally defined sexual offenses, which do not necessarily have to have the penetration and all of that, but they refer to all sexual offenses. The number of backlogs in the regional and the high courts, that is something that we are trying to address, really, because you will see that there's a rise. What we are doing currently, we're trying to take some of our prosecutors who we say that can do a lot also to even prevent the case from becoming a backlog. So we do away steadily, or we try and reduce the number of the backlog cases themselves. So we're looking into our high courts to take those resources from. And with regard to our strategic objective number two, that is improved collaboration with the JCPS partners. This is where we say that, and we've been saying that it is difficult for the NPA to take responsibility for all the other parties that should be playing a role in the whole JCPS and criminal justice system. But what is encouraging, members, is that, you know, in the previous years, there seemed to be a lack of cooperation between from the judiciary. But I must say right now, there is a lot of commitment from the judiciary to ensure that court efficiency is improved. We have been having a lot of engagement with the Office of the Chief Justice and the Chief Justice. And this Saturday, we all attended a meeting which was chaired by him. The meeting consisted of some of the judge presidents and the judge president from the Supreme Court of Appeal. There was also members from Public Works and Social Development, and members from the GCB, legal representatives. So we were all addressing the issues relating to court efficiency. And the result of that was that there is a committee that is formed that is going to look into what are the measures or indicators that should be put in place that are going to bind us all, so that we can be able to say that courts are now performing very well. And I'm hopeful that if we can all take joint accountability, as there is an agreement in principle that we should take joint accountability for the court efficiency and court performance, I'm sure that will go a long way in improving our performance. But besides that, as the NPA also, we have identified a certain system that we can put in place. We made a realization that with the increase of the jurisdiction in the regional courts, we continue to resource the high courts, despite the fact that a large number of cases that traditionally were tried before the high courts can now be tried in the regional courts, with the result that we find that prosecutors in the regional courts are a little bit overburdened than those in the high court. But having said that, we also do not want to compromise the quality of what is expected of the prosecutors in the high courts. So we're looking into taking some of the prosecutors who are located in the high courts to utilize them in the regional court, so that at least we can have a situation whereby if the other prosecutor today is preparing for trial, we give them opportunity to prepare for trial, the other can then run the court, so that there is that constant changing, so that we can get close to what we dream of having, two prosecutors per court at a time. So you're hoping that all of those processes are going to assist us in really improving performance. We're also trying to identify as well, we identified priority courts where we say that there is a lot of volume of work in this particular court, so we need to pump up resources more. But this is not going to work if, for example, equally, while we're trying to pump up lots of resources, then there isn't enough accommodation, there isn't enough courts that can be made available so that cases can then be heard speedily, which is why I think that the committee that is formed, which includes Public Works, is going to come in handy. And I must say that the acting DG for Public Works has made the commitment to the effect that she's a phone call away, and we gave her a promise that would ensure that we give her those phone calls where she can be able to prioritize building this course, or even giving us temporal structures if need be. So I think that is those are the measures that we're trying to put in place to ensure that we really improve in the court efficiency. If you go to the next slide, I think you will find that some of the things are really a repetition. This is a breakdown of the number of cases finalized through ADRM and the number of criminal court cases that finalized with VEDIC. We have acknowledged that our main problem really is the finalization of cases in particular with VEDIC, which is why we have put these measures in place which I've just referred to. We have also not attained our target with regard to the appeals finalized in the High Court. But members, if you will notice that really it is a slight deviation, there is going to be improvement with the focus that now the DPPs have put in place. The target on the number of appeal deadlocks has been reduced by 261, and our prosecutorial vacancy rate has also been reduced. The acting CEO will speak to this when he speaks to the establishment and resources and resourcing. And the number of case backlogs, as I've said in the beginning, has also been dropped by 5.7% to 34,926. As I had indicated, all the matters relating to forfeiture cases, Willie will explain that in detail. The next one, you will notice that is the percentage of formal representation dealt with within 5 days. We have made the realization that there has been some different interpretations by members of what is meant by dealt with within 5 days. Others thought that it would mean finalized within 5 days. But all that will require really is to be able to respond within 5 days. Just to issue something acknowledging that I acknowledge that I've received this matter is receiving attention. But we'll be working with those to correct this. The number of witnesses harmed or threatened while on the witness protection program, there are none. And the percentage of witnesses that walk off the witness program, we have reached our target, although there's 1.8% of the walk off. Then slide number 14. Gives a picture of the cases in the cases that the new cases that we received, the cases that were removed, and the cases that were finalized with verdict and finalized with ADRM. The next slide, that is on slide number 15, then shows us the input and the output of the different forums. For example, if you look into the High Courts, we have removed 137 cases, either through withdrawals, warrants, track of the rolls, or mental observations. If the members would like to have the breakdown of these cases, we will be able to finish them. And in the regional courts, in the same way, we have removed 44,111, and in the district courts, we have removed 444,116. There are various reasons why the cases are actually removed from the roll. Though we are saying that there has been a reduction in the withdrawal, we would like in the withdrawal of cases because due to the deduction, but we still want to emphasize more that cases really should not be enrolled before court unless the investigations are finalized. And that is something that we had discussed at length even in the forum on Saturday, that we have principles here that are saying that no case, no enrollment, but we still find those other offices where cases are really enrolled only to be withdrawn at the end of the day. So we're discouraging that very, very, very much. It's something that we're working very, very hard on. It's something to have the case that are put on the roll, because there are those that you're not going to be able not to put on the roll. For example, people who are arrested, you know, for those serious offences, but then the cases have got to be investigated only to find that, you know, they are justifiable circumstances, but to a large extent you find that the case should never have been enrolled in the beginning. Have we just adhered to the principle of that we wouldn't be having this huge number of the withdrawals of cases? So the next slide then shows the difference in years, that is, it's a comparison between 2010-11 and 2011-2012. Exactly what I was just saying here, that in the withdrawals for 2010-2011, we had withdrawn 1,983 cases, but whereas if you look into 2011, there is a reduction, but that's what I've already alluded to, that it's something that we are really working towards. And these were the warrants that were issued, and the figure there also reflects the external transfers, the mental referrals, the struck of the roles. If you look into the total, it gives us the same study that was given, but this is just a breakdown. The total of the between the withdrawals, the warrants, the external transfers, the mentals, and the struck of the role, you will see that it gives a total of 488,564. And above, we're just showing the difference in forum, that is in the High Court, the Regional Court, and the District Court. And also in the next slide, we're just showing the cases that are finalized by each forum, that is the number of cases finalized by the High Court compared to the cases that were finalized in the previous year and this year in the regional courts. We noted that the district courts last year did not reach their targets, whereas the regional courts and the High Courts finalized the number of cases. You see, this is where our bulk of the problem is basically in the district courts with regard to low finalization, because in the district courts, you would expect that there will be a large number of cases that are finalized. But traditionally, cases that are there are not complex cases. The complexity arises in the regional court and the high court, which is why we, in the same meeting that we had the different chief magistrates from various jurisdictions. And we are also engaging them as the NPA separately. We have agreed that we are going to begin to share our performance information with them, because currently, you know, we have performance information, they do not have performance information. Probably to bring it to their attention that if we can increase our court utilization in terms of hours, there's a lot that we can achieve, even before we can go to agreeing on the joint indicators and measures and all of that. And in the next slide, we are showing the manner in which the cases were finalized in the district court. You will notice that the number of informal mediations would be higher than the number of cases finalized with divisions. I think we did provide a report when we were requested by the members of the committee just to give them what type of cases were finalized through informal mediations. We did that. But most of the cases that are dealt, that are finalized through informal mediation, particularly in the regional court, because ideally, you know, you don't want to see a lot of those cases that are finalized in the regional court by mediation. But from the reports that we have requested from the various PPs and the chief prosecutors, what we realize is that it will be those cases that involve the people that would really, really know each other, that wouldn't want to go before court and testify, that have spoken to each other, they have now, you know, decided to let bygones be bygones. It's really those matters. It's never matters primarily that involve parties that do not know each other. But even then, we do not necessarily in all instances agree with them, because there are those type of cases where honestly you make a decision that you cannot mediate this type of a case informally. But suffice to say, going forward this year, we have a policy in place that we require all prosecutors to comply with, which is uniform, before a case can be informally mediated. I think I commented mostly on the regional court, because in the next slide, then you will see that the actual number of the cases that are mediated informally was 1,465, which is why I thought I must explain this from the beginning. And the next slide, on slide number 20, really shows the finalization of cases in the high courts. We had the guilty and sentence of 960, the not guilty 159, and the three cases that we are referring to here were cases which were then referred to the high court, which was where the sentences were then confirmed. 16 of those sentences were not confirmed. And the next slide deals primarily with the backlog figures. We have made a comparison of the backlog cases, and we gave a percentage in terms of the forum of the number of the backlog cases, as well as the outstanding cases. As I was saying, ideally, you would see that there is quite a percentage in the regional courts of the backlog cases, precisely because of the complexities of the cases that are dealt with by the backlog courts. But I must say that the backlog project, as we said in the beginning, it has contributed a lot in at least in bringing down even the outstanding cases that we have throughout the years. In 2010-2011, we had outstanding cases, for example, in the regional court of 52,356, and 2011-12 we had 49,387. And the backlog cases, it's a pity that there is an increase of 17,000 by 32%, 17,272. But the percentages are going down, as you will see that in 2010-2011, the total has gone down from 37,034 to 34,926. I think what we actually need to do is to just, and we've asked our operations meeting just to do an analysis of the whole backlog project, so we can be able to see its effectiveness. Starting from the inception up until to date, we've asked them to do that analysis. I'm going to ask Advocate Majogun to take us through the slide with regard to the diversion of children in terms of the Criminal Justice Act.
Thank you, Acting NDVP.
what I've got some comments around diversion even before we just go focus on the very performance of the different courts. One of the issues that we have seen and identified is the fact that even though more children come into the system, we divert less and less children. There are two factors that we have noticed around this issue. The first factor is that there is a lessening of children below the age of 12 because of the very act, the Child Justice Act, that has sort of increased the age of capacity to commit crimes for children. So less children now below the age of 12 are no longer coming into the system as they used to. So there's a clearance of those cases, which is why you see less and less diversion. And also that some children of the category between 12 and 18 are committing more serious offenses, which are not easily divertible. And I think that this is one of the factors that is actually seen the emergence of the ADRM as the mechanism of choice with dealing with such cases. So that is the background to the figure that you will see. I think they are self-evident in that for 2010-2011, in the district court, we saw Section 9 referrals, which are 788. And in the year under consideration, there's only 559 of those cases. So there's clearly a deviation of 29.10%, which speaks to the issue I was talking about. In the regional courts, we had 7 in the previous year, which is 2010-2011, and we had 26 in 2011 and 2012. In terms of diversions, we've seen 2,401 cases in 2010-2011, but we've seen 2,057 only in the year under consideration, which is the deviation that I tried to explain with the differences in the age groups. In the regional court, we've seen 43, and then in the regional court in the current year, we've seen 53, which is a 23%, deviation. The preliminary inquiries, we see that there has been a decrease again, which we attribute to the fact that children of lesser ages are now taken out, and it's compulsory to have preliminary inquiries, prior to diversion in those cases. We've seen 4,551 in 2010-2011 and 3,640 in 2011-2012. And the regional court has seen an increase in 69 because of the fact that children are committing, more serious offenses. Then you'll find more in the regional court than you used to find before. So that is what accounts for those diversions. I think that, one of the anxieties we had, I think particularly when we last presented to this committee, was the rise of the ADRMs as opposed to diversions, because the diversions you'd necessarily expect that because they are now regulated by legislation, which is intended to facilitate them, and yet ADRMs are more informal in nature. Informal mediation are more informal in nature. But now we've put in place policies, as the acting NTPP has said, policies and policy directives that actually regulate that environment and actually ensures that there is absolute documentation of the kind of cases, why it was referred to informal mediation, so that there is less possibilities of abuse of the system in itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Advocate Mashogwene. Mr. Willie Hofmeyer, he always reminds me that he's not an advocate. I must never forget to call him Mr. Hofmeyer. I nearly said Advocate Hofmeyer. difficult to him to take us through both strategic objectives 3 and 5 because they are basically interlinked. But before he can do that, I just want to explain to members without being really a defensive. You know, the cases in Output 5 are cases traditionally that really take time to finalize. I think members will remember that in the days of the Office for Serious Economic Offenses, which was then headed by Advocate Jan Swanepoel then, those cases have never been finalized in time because they really take time because of the complexities in there. And even we have seen that during the era of the then independent directorate, serious economic offences, and equally with also the now defunct DSO. I was fortunate in that I was part of both those agencies. The difference, I think, that we had then was that we never took any case. We were criticised severely, but we never enrolled any case up until we have finalized our investigation. What I seem to pick up is that probably what we have done in this instance, we have enrolled these cases with the hope that the investigations will somehow be fast-tracked. But then you find that probably it was a little bit early to have the cases on the road. That is why we're struggling, perhaps, despite the other challenges. Then that you'll find that because people who are charged with this offense, with this type of offenses, in Output 5, are people who are moneyed, who are really challenged every step, who raise challenges every step of the way, constitutional challenges, you know, anything on earth that they are going to raise, and that really takes time, and it takes time. By the time the case gets to court. And I must say that while talking about this, I'm tempted to refer to the case, to Dave King's case that we have recently lost in the High Court in Joburg. It's typically those things with the delaying tactics. And unfortunately, with the advent of the Constitution, people claim rights, my right to a fair trial. So they will keep on asking for postponements and postponements up until the unfortunate thing that the witnesses do forget. It's basically difficult to testify on something which took place some 50 years, 15 years, or 10 years ago, because you will not be able to remember each and everything that happened. And in the process, because those cases, they rely on documentary evidence, and in the process, that chain is then lost. One of the cases I was fortunate to do myself and finalize in Rustenburg was because all the investigators, for some reason, who were responsible for the searches and seizures of documents, were still alive, regardless of the fact that they were now stationed in a, they have since left the police, but they're working stuff, and they were willing to come and testify. That is how we're able to get a conviction in that case. Even that case, it was one of the first pyramid schemes that took place in 1996, but I was only able to finalize it in 2003. So it just shows how long it takes to finalize this. Because I thought I must just make that background before Mr. Hoffman can then present the both strategic objectives 3 and 5. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm on slide 23 that is on the board. So I'm just going to start with the JCPS corruption statistics. I think it is one of the areas where there has been significant progress over the last few years, a significantly sharper focus on corruption in the JCPS system itself. And I think that is reflected in the number of convictions we obtained. That was 107. That was well over the amount of the previous year, a 270% increase and well above our target. And one of our focuses there also have been to try and shorten the trial period for those cases. We missed our target there slightly, but we didn't really have baseline information in terms of being able to set it. But I think one of the things that I do want to mention, let me just go on to the other indicators first, that's on the next slide. That's essentially the target that was set for AFU in terms of JCPS officials. Again, I think we've done relatively well there. The targets, as you can see, were not very big targets because essentially before this we had done, I think, two or three cases in the last 4 or 5 years. So we didn't really know what to expect out of it. But in terms of freezing orders, we obtained 11 last year. That was significantly above our target at the time. The value of freezing orders was also relatively high. In general, these cases come out with fairly small value numbers. In terms of the completed cases, we obtained 7 confiscation orders, again, well over target. But in terms of the value of the completed cases, you will see those 7 cases in total, the amount involved was 60,000 Rand. And so we are doing quite a lot of fairly small cases here, essentially to send a message, not necessarily because they are always significantly high cases. That being said, there are a few quite big corruption and cases on the go. I think one of the cases that the AFU involved in was the former head of the organized crime in Johannesburg. That involves a fair amount of money. One of the amounts reflected there is the 1.3 million rand bribe that was offered to General Boysens, then the head of the scorp of the Hawks in KZN. So there are some quite important cases involved here, but a lot of them are fairly small. In terms of the convictions on the next slide, I think one of the challenges we have at the moment, and I think that is something that we would like to look further with the ministers about, but at the moment the definition of JCPS officials essentially include everybody in the cluster. Now you can see the Department of Basic Education sits in the cluster, and there are 17 of them counted in the 107. That doesn't make a lot of sense to us. So I think we are putting that fact on the table here, but that is the way that it is defined at the moment, that it relates to officials from those departments, and we think that is something that needs a bit more work to be done. The other Metro Police, 16, and then the police itself, 41 convictions. So those goes much more to the core of the business that we are looking at. I'm then going to go to slide number 29 that deals with the output 5 cases, and for those that may not be familiar with the term, essentially this is looked at individuals who have benefited by more than 5 million rand from corruption and who still have 5 million rand to recover. So who have been enriched by 5 million rand, we should say. And you will know that the overall target there is that we should achieve 100 convictions by April 2014, by the end of March 2014. I think the acting NDVP has already indicated some of the issues that deal with these big commercial cases, and I think that is a real issue if you look at the first line, where our target in the last year was to achieve 15 convictions. We achieved 0. In fact, total to date is 0. And I think that is a significant challenge. The number of freezing orders that we've obtained, we were well below target there, but we did obtain 7 freezing orders. The total to date of freezing orders that we have by the end of the financial year was 22 of the 100 that we are seeking to achieve. So I think on the freezing orders that normally happen at the same time as an arrest, there has been quite a lot of progress. And then the instituted corruption instituted prosecutions. There were only four during the year once again. The total to date there is also 22. So again, I think there has been significant progress there, but the target is a real challenge. I think just on this slide, I think the point that I do want to make is that in the 10 years of the AFU up to 2009, when these targets were first mooted, I don't think we froze more than assets in more than three cases that fall in this category. And that's what I'm saying. 22 may not sound a lot against 100, but I think that it does reflect in the anti-corruption task team that a lot of progress is being made, and there is a real and concerted effort to find these big corruption cases and to deal with them more effectively. So just generally on these cases, we thought it would also be useful just to give you the amounts frozen by asset forfeiture in these cases. In the past financial year, it was 112 million rand in the big corruption cases. And our total to date in asset forfeiture now is 604 million rand that has been frozen. That is quite a formidable amount. Of the amount frozen, I perhaps should just mention, it's not on the slides, that a total of 61 million rand has already been forfeited to the state. Now, that may sound a bit strange, seeing that there's been no conviction so far, but one of the things that we have been using is the non-conviction-based forfeiture, the Chapter 6 of POCA. And particularly, we have found in KZN, as the NDPB mentioned, a number of farms that have been corruptly alienated in the land redistribution program of government. And so far, we have frozen a large amount of those farms, but a lot of that 61 million rand is from cases where we have now actually forfeited those farms and returned them back to government for redistribution. Another part of the money that has been finalized relates to the land bank case. Again, the prosecution there on an early stage still, but we were able to recover some of the assets through the non-conviction-based forfeiture, essentially. So we're looking at more creative uses of the legislation to at least speed up part of the process. I think from the AFU side, we have set ourselves a target actually to get to a billion, to move that 604 million up to close to a billion in this current year or soon into the new year. So there are some very big cases still in the pipeline. I've mentioned the issue of the 22 persons that are in court already. Perhaps I should add 2 points just to what the NDPP said. I think the one point that we are looking seriously at the ACTT is to use asset forfeiture case legislation more effectively to freeze the or restrict the amount of money that is available to alleged criminals to fight cases in court. Now, I think David King has been mentioned. I think it's a matter of public record that he's spent about 200 million rand so far litigating against the state. But, you know, it's in our cases, we find the very money that has been stolen from government is now being used to delay with all sorts of extraneous challenges and so on. So I think one of the suggestions, Chair, has been that we should perhaps look at approaching our minister, and we've mentioned this to the minister, but also the committee, to adopt a British type system where they say if your assets have been frozen, you have to use legal aid lawyers to defend yourself. And that happens in very serious cases like the Burumach trial. But we do not think that it's right. But obviously, that's an issue that needs to be further discussed. We started a process with LASA as well because it has significant implications for them. But we do think that is one way really in which cases can be speeded up is to limit the unlimited access the courts grant people at the moment to their frozen funds for litigation. On the next slide, perhaps just to give a slightly broader view then of all the cases that are under investigation by the anti-corruption task team, because they're not dealing only with the 5 million rand plus cases. So in total, there are 66 cases under investigation, and this now includes the 5 million rand, but this is the overall totals, just to be clear. 26 of those cases are in court, 10 of them are on trial, and the persons involved in those cases is significant. It's 108 accused persons, 17 have been convicted, and in the cases not in court, there's a further 233 persons under investigation. And just to be clear, these stats are till the end of Q1 of this year. It's not till the April of this year. I think that's it on the general corruption issue. Shall I just continue with the asset forfeiture slide? So if we can perhaps go back to the slides dealing with asset forfeiture. It's on slide number 24 is, I think, where most of the figures are. That's the JCPS one. Slide number 7. No. Slide number 12. 12 and 13. So perhaps just on asset forfeiture overall, I wanted to make a couple of general points. I think we've been used to coming to Parliament every year, having exceeded our targets and enjoying our best year ever. And I think this year we have to go back and say it was our second best year ever, because we didn't do as well as last year. I think we did overall do pretty well in terms of our targets. But there are a couple of reasons for that. I think the first one is that the increases that we have projected in our outputs, and our outputs have risen considerably over the years, have been partly based on budget increases and partly on increased productivity of our staff. Over the last 2 or 3 years, our budget essentially has not increased, even though our targets kept on increasing. So we are still sitting essentially with the same capacity we had 2 or 3 years ago. So just to go through the targets, the first one is on the previous slide, slide 12. You will see that we aimed to do 310 forfeiture cases. We achieved 300. It's actually 301. And even though that is below target, I've just put those figures in there. It is 41% more than we did 4 years ago. And our targets are, in terms of that, our target is 40% more than it was 3 years ago. And if we go to the next slide, in terms of the new freezing orders, our target was 330. We achieved 318. That's nearly 4% below target. Again, it is 30% more than we were doing 4 years ago, and our targets are 32% more than they were 4 years ago. So we don't think that it's a bad performance, but it is. We failed to meet our targets there. The other factor that I do want to mention is that we have devoted quite a lot of AFU resources to the high-value corruption cases, and that has had an impact on our ability to do many smaller cases, basically. We probably have the equivalent of more than 10% of our lawyers working only on high-value corruption cases, and they are some of our best lawyers. So we have, on those number targets, started the process of engagement with Treasury, essentially to realign them and to say, let us not continue to grow the number targets. Let's rather reflect our current focus, which is more on high-value cases. And I think Treasury so far has given us a positive response. We don't quite know what the final outcome would be. But the other area where the focus on the big corruption cases has had an impact is on the value of our completed matters. Because again, we are stuck in a number of big cases that are heavily litigated and are not being completed. So that green there should actually be a red. And we are minus 27% on the value of completed cases. Again, it is 14% more than we did 4 years ago. Our target last year was 87% more than it was 4 years ago. So our targets, I think, are just not in alignment at the moment with our current focus of the AFU. On the new freezing orders, on the other hand, I think that is the one area where our focus on the big corruption cases really has reaped benefits. The 553 million that we froze last year, a significant amount of that came from corruption cases, as I said earlier. And the deviation, this is, I think, the second highest amount that we've ever frozen in this year. So we have asked Treasury that if our targets on the other indicators can be more realistic, that our target on the freezing orders can be increased for the future, and we're pretty confident that we will meet those. Then on the overall success rate of the AFU, I think that is was a very good achievement in the last year. It was 96% our overall success rate. Last year it was 95.7%. But really, we've come up from a few years ago where we were below 90% to now thinking about moving. Our target has already been moved up to 93% for this current year and moving it up to 94% for the next year. So I think that was it on the asset forfeiture. Thank you.
Edward Kachiba, before you proceed, to ask if we can break now. Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, we'll reconvene here in the same venue at 3 o'clock this afternoon. All right. Thank you.